your people means that you are understanding them on their own terms. That you are trying to foster a genuine connection. And we know that relationships build to the extent that people really listen to one another, that they don't dominate the conversation. In many ways, an excellent podcast is actually a pretty good example of a one-on-one, right? So you think about what you've already done so far in this conversation and in other conversations, you know, you have a general framework, but you're making this podcast about me, right? You're facilitating it. You're helping this conversation follow and become powerful. But in general, you're trying to bring out what's on my mind and my expertise and my knowledge. And to do so, you have to really listen. You can't dominate, right? And those are many of the characteristics to help someone feel seen. Because truly taking an interest in another person is a gift. It's a gift. And we actually know this from the research, that one of the greatest predictors of life satisfaction is not money, it's not health, it's actually helping of other people. When we feel like we're helping others, we feel much better about our lives. So these one-on-ones are just this opportunity to connect, support, elevate others. And that's good for them, but it's good for you.
My name's Dr. Gary Crotaz, and I'm a coach, podcaster, and award-winning author of The Idea Mindset, a book about how to figure out what you want and how to get it. The unlock moment is that flash of remarkable clarity when you suddenly know the right path ahead. When I'm in conversation with my coaching clients, these are the breakthroughs that are so profound that they remember vividly where they were, who they were with, what they were thinking when their unlock moment happened. In this podcast, I'll be meeting and learning about people who have accomplished great things or brought about significant change in their life, and you'll be meeting them with me. We'll be finding out what inspired them, how they got through the hard times, and what they learned along the way that they can share with you. Thank you for joining me on this podcast to hear all about another Unlock Moment. Hello, dear listener, and welcome to another episode of the Unlock Moment podcast. There are an estimated 1 billion meetings held every day somewhere on this planet. And yet so often when it comes to connecting in the workplace, so many people say, I hate meetings. And that includes the people organizing them as well as those forced to attend. So how do we meet better, connect better, build relationships and get things done so that our workplace meetings are a pleasure and the fuel to our growth rather than a chore? Dr. Steven Rogelberg, an organizational psychologist, holds the title of Chancellor's Professor at UNC Charlotte. He's an award-winning teacher, has over 200 publications, and has been cited well over 10,000 times in the academic literature. Adam Grant has called Stephen the world's leading expert on how to fix meetings. Stephen's previous book, The Surprising Science of Meetings, has been recognized by the Washington Post as the number one leadership book to watch out for. And his new book, Glad We Met, The Art and Science of One-to-One Meetings, came out in January and has been gathering rave reviews. Stephen has been featured on major TV broadcasts, CBS, CNN, BBC World, on radio, in most major newspapers and magazines, and on leading podcasts, including Freakonomics, HBR Ideacast, and now here on The Unlock Moment. He's delivered keynotes on how to have great meetings at Google, Facebook, Amazon, Pfizer, Cisco, the United Nations, the list goes on. And in 2022, Stephen was invited to testify to the US Congress on the topic of being successful and engaging others in very difficult working environments. I can't wait to hear more. Steven Rogelberg, it's my great pleasure to welcome you to the Unlock Moment.
Why, thank you. That was just such a lovely introduction. I really appreciate it.
I'm so delighted that we could have you here for a run through and to hear about this amazing new book. So you're this global expert in the art and science of meetings, but what do we need to know about the journey you've been on in order to understand why this is such a passion for you?
As an organizational psychologist, I'm really drawn to study pain points at work and try to figure out how to solve them. What brought me to meetings is clearly it's a pain point, right? There's no disputing that. But I remember early on my journey, and this was probably 20 years ago, what brought me to meetings was actually a series of interviews I was doing. And I was just talking to people about meetings and the amount of meetings they have. And what I was focusing on was how they felt at the end of their work days. And what we found was that when people had lots of meetings, and you think when you have lots of meetings, right, you're getting stuff done, right? That's the hope, that basically they'd end their workday not feeling a sense of accomplishment. And that was really disturbing to me. That if you could imagine these millions and millions and millions of people having meetings, and yet the more they have, they just go home feeling like, what happened to my day? And that's what brought me full on to this topic. I wanted to try to prevent that because that is a horrible state of affairs.
And when you think back in your own journey and sitting in, I'm sure, many meetings, do meetings come to light where you go, this is, in my career journey, one of the worst I've had? Do you think of those?
Sadly, yes. And yeah, I mean, wallowing in bad meetings just kills me. I hate it. I hate the feeling. I hate, you know, you basically relinquish power to a meeting leader. And when they don't act like a good steward, it's really upsetting. And so my coping mechanism was multitasking like crazy. So I was able to, you know, reclaim my lost time. But I will tell you this, Gary, one of the benefits of writing books around meetings is the meetings I attend are much better now. Like, people are on notice, right? They're actually being intentional. They're being thoughtful. The meetings are tighter. So I will say, if you really want to make your meeting experiences better, just write a book on the topic.
I was going to say, you've certainly been on this career journey to solve your own personal meetings. That's a part of the benefit that you've realized from
that. That is definitively part of the benefit.
Love it. And this book, of course, is focusing on one-to-one meetings, which is a particular subtype of meetings, but obviously a huge proportion of, I'm sure, the total pool of meetings. What are the unique challenges of running a one-to-one meeting really well, do you think?
Okay, so let me back up and make sure that your listeners all understand what I mean by a one-on-one meeting. So obviously our days are filled with one-on-one encounters, right? One-on-one conversations. That's common. What I mean by a one-on-one meeting is a meeting that is orchestrated and facilitated by a manager, but it's not for them, it's for their directs. And these meetings happen at regular cadences. So they are regular, predictable. The meetings try to understand what's on the minds of the direct, you know, focusing on their well-being, challenges, areas they need help or support, career, teams, organization. And so the manager is trying to understand what is on their minds, their challenges and problems. These one-on-ones are the opportunity for the manager to truly see their people, to see their people. And so that's what's so unique about this meeting type. I wouldn't even call it a subtype of meetings. It's a whole nother category. Right? Because this is a meeting where you're not looking for equal engagement. You're not looking for the manager to save the day. The manager is really trying to elevate the other party, trying to get them comfortable and feeling safe to express themselves. Yes, they're offering support and help, but it's really at the behest of the direct. So it's a very different type of engagement, and it's absolutely critical. Especially in today's work environment where people tend to be more distributed, they don't have that same sense of connection. These one-on-ones build genuine connection, they build genuine relationships, and the research on one-on-ones is phenomenal, that when managers do these and do them well, that employees are just thriving more on the job, they're more engaged, they tend to stay on the job, your best performers, right? Because we've all heard the adage that people don't leave bad jobs, they leave bad bosses. And this is your opportunity to prove you're not a bad boss. But at the same time, it helps the manager because managers are inherently evaluated by the success of those that report into them, right? That's the engine for the manager. So as their people do better, are better aligned, that only helps you as a manager. So one-on-ones are this fantastic package that elevates a workplace, makes the workplace more humane, builds motivation, thriving, and success. Now, there was another part to your question, which was trying to get at the problem areas. So sadly, there's quite a few. Sadly, that when we ask employees how optimal their one-on-one meetings are, only around 50% of these one-on-one meetings are rated optimally. That means 50% are rated suboptimally. That's not helpful, right? That's a situation where you're investing the time and you're actually not getting the benefits because they're not being executed properly. This poor performance by managers is, in some regards, not a surprise. A, our research shows that there's a blind spot. That generally, if you survey the parties after the one-on-one, the manager thinks it was better than the direct.
Interesting.
That's a problem, right? When they think it's good, they're not motivated to change.
Mm.
Second, I've only found one organization out of the hundreds I've chatted with that provides any training on this topic. So managers don't think they're the problem. They're just recycling the bad practices they themselves have experienced. So these one-on-ones just don't reach the level that they need to be at. But I'll say this, Gary, this is one meeting that should not be an email. This is not one meeting that we say, okay, we're not getting value from it. We need to cut it. That's an inappropriate response. The response is, we know people need to feel seen. We know that. That is part of the human condition. So this book and this content is all around saying, okay, what does the science say? How can we make sure we do these things so that we get all the positive benefits?
And I was going to come back to that word because it was so striking to me when you said these meetings are for managers to see their people. And I think through the organizations I've worked with, the many, many meetings I've been in, the meetings I've led with people, the meetings I've been in with my line manager, the way you described that powerful, intimate, personal, connected one-to-one meeting, I thought, I don't know whether I've been in many meetings that ever felt like that. And I don't know whether either party in the meeting was really thinking that was what they were trying to create. And the way you described it felt so obvious. And this idea of seeing your people, I can imagine managers going, I need to see all my team this week. And what they mean is see as in spend time with, be opposite, right, and literally visually see them. You're saying something quite different there with seeing. Tell me more about what does that mean? What does seeing your people really mean?
Seeing your people means that you are understanding them on their own terms, that you are trying to foster a genuine connection. And we know that relationships build to the extent that people really listen to one another, that they don't dominate the conversation. In many ways, an excellent podcast is actually a pretty good example of a one-on-one, right? So you think about what you've already done so far in this conversation and in other conversations, you know, you have a general framework, but you're making this podcast about me, right? You're facilitating it. You're helping this conversation follow and become powerful. But in general, you're trying to bring out what's on my mind and my expertise and my knowledge. And to do so, you have to really listen. You can't dominate, right? And those are many of the characteristics to help someone feel seen.
It's so interesting because it makes me feel, and you're about to tell me this is true, I'm sure. It makes me feel as though part of the education is even what you're aiming for in the meeting. It's not about you knew what you're aiming for, you just weren't very good at doing it. Actually, it may well be that many people are just not even aiming for that thing at all.
That's a fascinating comment you just made. And I think there's truth in that. I think a lot of managers think one-on-one meetings are just about status updates.
Right.
A rundown. And managers forget there's lots of ways of getting status updates, right? That's That's easy, right? People can send emails. They can contribute to asynchronous documents. You can do it in team meetings. Like status updates, that's low-hanging fruit. We can get that. Managers have that power to get that. This is just different. This is that dedicated time in your calendar where you're investing in someone else. And that's a good investment, right? Bringing more humanity into the workplace is the right thing to do from a values perspective. But it's also a great thing to do from a business perspective. Like we've evolved from the command and control systems of the Industrial Revolution. We've evolved away from that. We know there's real power in engaging all elements of the team, helping people to feel included, making sure their voices rise up and have influence on our innovation. We know that innovation's enhanced to the extent that we have more voices into the picture. We know that people are more committed to actions when they've involved in it. We know that people have choices with the jobs. It's not the old days where people just stay with the company no matter what. People have choices. And if you don't want your top talent to leave, this is a required intervention. But I just can't stress enough that this is part of the human condition. I don't care who you are. People want to feel seen. Children want to feel seen.
And we forget that, don't we? In the workplace, sometimes we forget about being human. I was talking with one of my coaching clients a few months back about how they work with their team, and they were being incredibly generous and supportive and open and helpful to their team, but actually not providing so much structure and challenge and balance around that. So actually for the team, it was a little bit indulgent. Some of the behaviors were kind of consequential to that. And a shift was reflecting on, well, how would it be if you were like that with your children? Oh, that would be very bad. That would be very bad. Yeah. Their behaviors would be very poor. So what do you do?
Right.
Well, there's boundaries and there's rules and that, you know, expectations. But I didn't want to treat people at work like children. I wouldn't say anything about treating people at work like children. But there's so much we can learn from how we naturally are as people, which is often more outside the workplace than in the workplace.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that's one of the exciting things about the book. So, you know, it's called Glad We Met, as you mentioned, The Art and Science of One-on-One Meetings. And while the work context dominates, it absolutely is relevant to any context where you meet with people. Mm-hmm. Bringing it to the home, we often go through days and days without meaningful, genuine conversations with our children. We tell them to do things. We tell them to load the dishwasher. We tell them to do their homework. We tell them to get ready for school. Like, we tell them a lot of things. But do we really genuinely engage with them on their terms? Where we ask them, you know, how are you? Really, how are you? I want to understand. And then there's even an adaptation of that where you ask your directs or kids or what have you to answer the how are you question on a 10-point scale, with one being horrible, 10 being great. How are you? Now you get someone providing a number. I'm a 5. Tell me more about that. How can I help you become an 8? Right? So that type of a conversation is really powerful. And when a parent finds time, and I'm not talking about rigorous schedule holds like we would necessarily do at work, but when we're intentional, like we know we have our kid in this period, we're either in the car or what have you, or taking a walk, you know, we know that we are dedicating this time and we're really trying to connect with them. These are moments we remember, and the kid does too. And the same applies to work. And, you know, when you have kind of an asymmetrical power relationship, then when the more powerful party takes a genuine interest in you, boy, that sends a heck of a message. And, you know, the outcomes are that person who feels seen and heard, they work hard, they care, they persevere, they're more agile, they share, they work better with one another. They help each other. There's so many things. And again, these are all good for you as a manager and all good for you as a parent.
And I think I hear that when the book is called Glad We Met, who did you imagine is saying that?
Both parties.
Right.
Both parties. Because truly taking an interest in another person is a gift. It's a gift. And we actually know this from the research, that one of the greatest predictors of life satisfaction is not money, it's not health, it's actually helping of other people. Mm-hmm. When we feel like we're helping others, we feel much better about our lives. So these one-on-ones are just this opportunity to connect, support, elevate others. And that's good for them, but it's good. It's good for you.
And I love this human connection side. And I talk loads about it on this podcast with guests, talking about how to build that personal human relationship and connection. Something I also love in this book is the practicality of how to set up those one-to-one meetings for success, the frequency, the duration of the meetings, the time of day. And it reminds me, I'm sure it was Jeff Bezos did an interview a while back where he was saying, there is an optimal time in my day when I do my best thinking, and therefore I make sure that the meetings where we're talking about the big stuff happen at a certain time of day. Mm-hmm. And I'd love people listening to this to be able to take away one or two very practical, tangible things they can do.
Yeah.
What does the science say about those kind of practical aspects of meetings? Yeah.
Thank you. That's a great question. And obviously the book is, I mean, that's the whole, it's the crux of the book. There's so much there that unpacks what the science says. But the book is different than my last book on the science of meetings in that I talk about the art and the science.
Right.
Because one-on-ones are one of those things that you can't be overly prescriptive. So I'm going to give you options, and then I want you to pick the options that fit who you are and fit who your direct is. So it's not formulaic. And so the book lays out choices. So let me share with you a few things that people often get wrong. And then obviously I hope people will get the book because then they'll learn lots of different things.
Exactly.
So first of all, around cadence, the research suggests that the most optimal cadence is doing this every single week or every other week, that allows you to have continuity and flow and just you keep weaving together more effectively the story of your direct. Monthly one-on-ones just don't seem to yield the same benefits. They're better than nothing, but there's quite a big drop-off. So the cadence matters. Interestingly, the time in each one-on-one matters less. So if you meet with your people for 20 minutes, but it's a really good 20 minutes versus an hour, that's not a really good hour, the 20 minutes is better. So it always comes down to quality, not just quantity of minutes. I think that's really exciting for managers, right? Because I'm sure you have managers say, how am I going to fit this in? And the fact is, well, we can find 20 minutes for each of our people each week. That's not a big lift. And by the way, as a related aside, what our research has shown is that basically when you're doing these things regularly on that weekly or every other week cadence, that employees actually save issues to those one-on-ones so that you get interrupted less, which makes you even more effective. Okay, so we talked a little bit about cadence. Then, you know, when you're crafting the plan of action or the agenda, the research strongly suggests that you do want to have a lightweight plan of action. And ideally, it's created by the direct report. The more involved they are, because again, this is a meeting for them, the better. And so one approach is called the listing approach, where as a manager, you tell the direct, hey, we're having this one-on-one, as you know, I want you to get the most out of this you possibly can. So please come with topics and issues you want to talk about, but not things that I necessarily want you to talk about, things that you want to talk about. I want you to think about your job, your career, the team, the organization. I want you to think short-term and long-term and prepare some topics to come in. That's a very energizing approach. Now, an alternative is a core question approach where you can say, hey, here are the core questions that we'll talk about, such as, what are your biggest challenges right now and how can I support you? That's totally fine because while the manager's providing those core questions, The direct is really controlling the content, right? Because these questions are very broad. So we want to have a plan of action. Let me share one more thing, because I mean, we could go on and on and on, right? But I'll share two things because I can't help myself. So one is when the manager is doing these one-on-ones, I want them to act just like you, Gary. I want them to ask questions. I want them to listen. I want them to really engage with what the other person's talking about. And I don't want them to dominate. I want them to make sure that they realize that this meeting is for the direct. All right. So we'll call that the Gary behaviors. And then finally, we want these meetings to have a good ending. Too many meetings actually don't have a proper conclusion. These meetings need a proper ending. And a proper ending is where there's a review. Okay, we talked about this. Here's what I committed to do to help you. And here's what you committed to do. Let's make sure we're clear on that. Take some notes. And even what the research shows is that when employees see you jotting down with a pen and paper, like manually doing it, they just evaluate this experience as more meaningful, right? Because you're it's another physical sign that you're engaged. So those are some of those tips, but there's so much. There's so much, but they're easy to digest. They're easy to digest.
Last question. If you were to think back to, in your career, the first time you were in some kind of managerial position and holding a one-to-one meeting, and if you think back and you think there's one thing I would have liked to have known or done differently to move myself forward a bit, right at that early stage, what do you think is sort of a good place for people to start to have better one-to-one meetings?
Talk less, listen more.
Right. And I think that I really resonate with that too. I remember being a young manager with a lot of opinions and a lot of things to say, and I felt like I needed to shape the agenda, tell people stuff and measure people and all that kind of stuff. What you're talking about isn't that at all. And I think that comes through so clearly, and it feels quite radical and yet so obvious at the same time, which is a great sort of takeaway feeling.
Yeah.
Stephen, how can people find out more about you and the work you do?
Thank you. Definitely go to my webpage. I've tried to make it into a resource center. So it's stephenrogelberg.com, stephenrogelberg.com. I have tons of resources there. I have links, you know, to my books, but I do want to stress that I'm so passionate around getting this content out there. I'm donating all my royalties to cancer research. So I'm not personally profiting from the book. I just want to get the science out there. So I hope people will buy the book because they want to learn, or they can buy the book if they want to help eradicate cancer. Both are pretty fabulous.
Fantastic. I didn't know that. So no, thank you so much for sharing. The unlock moment is that flash of remarkable clarity when you suddenly know the right path ahead. For professor, author, and speaker Stephen Rogelberg, it was connecting with how people felt coming out of meetings that inspired him to bring more human connection to the one-to-one. Find his new book, Glad We Met, The Art and Science of One-to-One Meetings, on Amazon and all great bookstores, and find out more at stephenrogelberg.com. Stephen, it's been such a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much for bringing the book to life and for joining me today on The Unlock Moment.
Thank you so much.
This has been The Unlock Moment, a podcast with me, Dr. Gary Crotez. Thank you for listening in. You can find out more about how to figure out what you want and how to get it in my book, The Idea Mindset. Find me on Instagram at Dr. Gary Crotez and subscribe to this podcast to get notified about future episodes. Most listeners to this podcast on Apple and Spotify haven't yet hit the follow button. If there's one thing you can do right now to help me out, then please click the follow button. The more followers I have, the better guests I can attract for you to learn from. Thanks again for listening, and join me again soon here on The Unlock Moment.